Okay, so good morning. We are today is the 28th of December, Tufshin Ayin. 28th of December 2017, the 10th of Tevis, Tufshin Ayin Ches, which happens to be my birthday every year. Asar B'Tevis is my birthday.
Really?
Yes, every year falls out that way.
Birthday,
okay. Not during the fast. No,
we wait.
Yes, we wait till. Night before or after? Well, we didn't have it the night before, so I assume that we'll do something the night after. All right, so we are in Halacha Day of Perek Ches of Tzav. It's very difficult to find anything. Everything here would have been a stretch. The thought was that we would talk about the issue of what?
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. We talk about the issue of the cheek and the maw and the matnas kahuna, which kind of makes an appearance here, although it's really in the previous parak, but it really shows up in a couple of prakim henceforth. So maybe we'll cover that then. Instead, we found a halacha that is, the Torah Tamima quotes the following Yerushalmi towards the very end of the parak. So in the very end, on pasuk lamed hey, parak ches pasuk lamed hey, it says upesach ol moed teishu yomim v'layla shivas yomim. At the opening of the ol moed, they stayed for 7 days. Ushmartem es mishveres Hashem v'lo samusu kichein tzuvesi, and they observed. You will observe Hashem's watch. As it was commanded. So the Gemara makes a comment. Rabbi Yaakov bar Acha b'shem Rabbi. Sorry, so not the Gemara. The Yerushalmi Gemara. The Yerushalmi in it's here as Perek Gimel Halacha Dalid. And they don't really do the, because there's been different editions over the years of Yerushalmis. So as opposed to when we quote a Talmud Bavli, so we quote the Daf. Right? We say, if appears on this, the Sech is this, Daf this. Well, the same Daf has been reprinted since the first printing. If you find the very first printing of Shas, it already, as far as, from what I could tell, the Dafs were already set up. And they were in terms of what word begins and what word ends. So, and that's been continued on through all the editions, even though some things have been added along the side. However, Yerushalmi has had various different printings. So, therefore, when you quote a Yerushalmi, you quote the Perek this, Mishnah this, or Perek this, Halacha this. They call the Mishnayos Halachos in the Yerushalmi. So, it's quoted in the.
Is that true in Bavli also?
What?
Mishnayos are called Halachos?
No, in the Bavli, it says when Mishnah starts, it says Mem Tuf, which is Masnisen, Aramaic
right,
for Masnisen.
Right.
So in the Yerushalmi, it actually says Halacha, and it actually gives the number. Right? In the Bavli, it doesn't give the number. Here it does. However, it seems like the number is off, because in the Torah Tamima, quote says Yerushalmi Moi Katan Perek Gimel Halacha Dalid, but that's not where it's found in at least the Yerushalmi that. The Vilna edition of the Yerushalmi for which the art scroll used, there it is found on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, the following Gemara. So Rabbi Yaakov bar Acha b'shem Rabbi Zohar Shema La Min Hada, that it's learned from here. What is it learned from here? The idea that one sits Shiva for 7 days. The Gemara wants to know, where is the source for sitting Shiva for 7 days? And it quotes this Gemara, it quotes this Pasuk. Pesach Ol Moed Tishu Yom V'Lay L'Shivas Yom Mishmarta L'Shpres Hashem Mishkan Hashem K'shem Sheshimir HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Olamu Shiva, just as Hashem observed Shiva for the world for 7 days, as I'm going to explain in a second. Kachatem shamru alachichem shiva. So to you should observe for your brothers 7 days of shiva. Who are those brothers it's referring to? So Nadav and Aviv. Nadav and Aviyu are going to die, right? It's like the joke, you know, that the two guys have a discussion if there's baseball in heaven, and one of them says, you know this joke? Do I have to say it?
Yes.
Right, one of them says, one of them, they say to each other, whichever one else goes to heaven, we're going to go and tell the other person that whether baseball appears in heaven or not. So one of them dies, and a couple days later, he appears to his friend in a dream and says, hey, I'm in heaven. And he said, yeah, so is there baseball there? He said, well, I got good news and bad news. The good news is that there's baseball in heaven. The bad news is that you're supposed to pitch tomorrow night. Right? Okay. But ching. So that's somewhat comparable to here, that Hashem says you're going to observe 7 days of Shiva. Now, after Nadav and Avihu pass away, do they sit Shiva? The answer is no. That Aaron is told that he's not permitted to sit Shiva. He's not permitted to do a couple of things because he's the Kohen Gadol, and therefore he's not allowed to do it. But we learn out from that these apparently are what you're supposed to do, if not for the fact that Aaron was a Kohen Gadol. So therefore, Aaron is told to sit for 7 days, knowing that Hashem, knowing that Shiva is about to commence. So therefore, we learn from here the idea that one sits Shiva for 7 days.
Where is this? How does this relate to Shiva?
It's not. I mean, it is, and it's not. A Pashup Shad is that it has nothing to do with sitting Shiva. Hashem just says you should be there for 7 days. But the Yerushalmi learns from here that Nadav and Avihu are about to die. You're not going to be sitting Shiva for them when they die, so sit now. And therefore, we learn here a source for the idea of 7 days. Now, the Torah Tamima here makes the point and says this obviously is not a Dindorei. So this obviously is not a real thing that they're learning out from the Torah for two reasons. One of them, as Sam pointed out, was the Pasuk has nothing to do with Shiva. It's going to be very hard to deduce that. The second reason is that the whole idea of sitting Shiva for 7 days is not a din doraisa. Sitting Shiva for 1 day maybe is doraisa, maybe, maybe not. Probably under the circumstances that exist today, probably is not. But certainly the idea of sitting Shiva is only a din derabanan. But it's finding an asmachta. It's finding a source that appears in the Chumash. There is the Gemara then turns around and says, and how do you know that Hashem sat Shiva for the world for 7 days? What is that talking about? So if you look at the Psukim by creation, it says, Vayhi l'shiva seyamim umeima bulayu al aris, that it was 7 days and the water of the flood were on the earth. So what is that referring to? So it's referring to that Hashem mourned the destruction before the water actually destroyed the rest of the world. It describes the first 7 days as Hashem's mourning of destruction. So the Gemara asks, does a person mourn before the person dies? Right? That's a little difficult to understand. So he says, well, by a human being doesn't know when the person's going to die. So therefore, a human being is therefore, so to speak, held, what?
Limited.
Right, he's limited because, well, a human's a human. Right? So a human has to wait for the person to die in order to sit Shiva. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have that limitations. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sat Shiva, so to speak, for the world, even before the world was completely destroyed. Yeah?
Years.
What?
It was being destroyed by the flood for 40 years.
The flood wasn't for 40 years. There was 40 days, right. Right, so what's the Pasuk referring to by the 7 days? What's that? That's the question that the Yerushalmi has. The Yerushalmi has, that's referring to Hashem's Avelis, whatever that means. That's one possibility. The other possibility that the Yerushalmi suggests is that those were 7 days of Avelis for Misushalach. Okay, I would add one more just because it's this week's Parsha.
7 days come in with the flood?
If you find the Pasuk is Bereshis Perek Zion Pasuk Yud. 7:10 in Bereshis. Because we're on the topic and because it fits in with this week's Parsha, I would just throw in the following, the Gemara that precedes it, even though it doesn't have to do with this. The Gemara has a different, the Gemara goes down a list of things trying to figure out where we get this idea of 7 days from. And the Gemara here says, "Minayin le'evil mina Torah Shiva." How do we know that Avelus is 7 days? It's the Gemara right before, and the Gemara answers, "Vayas la'aviv evil shivas yamim." Happens to be this week's parsha. And Yosef sat Shiva for his father, or sat an Avelus for his father for 7 days. So that sounds like a pretty good source, right? It's a pretty direct source. So the Gemara rejects it, the Yerushalmi rejects it by saying, Ulameidin davar kodum lematan Torah. What, do we learn any halachos from things that happened before Matan Torah? Of course not, so to speak. So therefore, we can't learn out from Yosef sitting Shiva for his father for 7 days, plus we don't learn out halachos before the father, from before the Torah was actually given. Now, Sam is scratching his head and saying, wait a second. We spent an entire year learning Bereshis, and in every one of the 50 chapters of Bereshis, we came up with a halacha day. So some of them, again, might have been a little bit of a stretch, admittedly so. But a bunch of them are halachos. The Gemara certainly quotes stories from the Avos as sources when it comes to halacha. So what are you talking about? Where does this Yerushalmi get off saying that, oh, we don't learn any halachos out from things that happened before Matan Torah? So in the footnote here, at the bottom of the art scroll Yerushalmi, it has a box called Textual and Interpretive Variants. And he quotes from the Ha'emek Sheila. Who wrote the Ha'emek Sheila? Mekshela was the Nitziv. The Nitziv is going to come up shortly with another Nitziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. So Mekshela responds by saying that, what does it mean that we don't learn, it doesn't mean that we never learn out halachas from before Har Sinai. The problem, there's just a problem with learning halachas from before Har Sinai. The problem is that while we assume that the Avos were entirely bound with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, etc., and you know, they kept Shomer Torah Mitzvos, etc., mitzvos were not binding on them. And we gave a couple of examples of that when we learned it. For example, Yaakov, the simplest pshat with regards to Yaakov marrying both Leah and Rachel, is that for some reason, even though there is an Isser D'Oraisa marrying two sisters, for some reason Yaakov was able to do so. Why was he able to do so? So you could come up with some reasons why he would be motivated to do so, but whatever the motivation was, he was permitted because there was that motivation existed. I mean, there was a good reason why Yaakov should go ahead and marry two sisters, whatever those reasons were.
So until he got to Israel.
Up until he got, right, so that's a pshat, right? That he got to Israel, and therefore Rachel died before he got into Israel because he couldn't be married to both in Israel. That's one of the possibilities. But he's outside. Why did he do it in the first place? So whatever the reason is, he did it. So you can't learn out from that for us because that was before Matan Torah, and he might have had a separate motivation. So the Emek Sheila suggests that perhaps the same idea exists here as well. That Yosef mourned for his father for 7 days. So when are you allowed to learn out from the Avos? You're only allowed to learn out from the Avos when there isn't another possible reason as to why they're doing what they were doing. Right? If they perhaps had a separate motivation, so they're not bound by the halachos of the Torah like we are. So if they have a separate motivation for what they would do, perhaps you can't learn out from the Avos. But if there's no other possible explanation, so then we could learn out from the Avos. So suggests the Nitziv that why did Yosef sit shiva for his father for 7 days? So perhaps he set shiva for his father for 7 days because that's the halacha. You set shiva for a parent for 7 days, or you set shiva for a loved one for 7 days. However, perhaps Yosef set shiva for his father for 7 days because Yaakov was completely unique. That Yaakov was considered a tzaddik. Yaakov was, after all, was one of the three avos. They don't come around too often. So Yaakov got the extra merit of sitting shiva for 7 days by his son. But maybe a regular person doesn't get that merit. Right, so therefore you can't learn out from that halacha. That's his suggestion, that you can't learn out from that halacha because maybe Yaakov was unique. So therefore you need another source to tell you, no, Yaakov wasn't unique. That is our halacha, that we sit here for 7 days. But again, as we mentioned before, that's only a din d'rabban, it's not din d'oraisa, so we're really only searching for a asmachta. But we figured, after that introduction, that maybe we cover a couple of the important halachos of how do you measure those 7 days for when a person is sitting shiva, right? When does the count begin, and when does the clock start, and when does the clock end? Right? When does the clock start? When does the clock end? So there's two important halachos to keep in mind. There's one important halacha which is going to have an impact on both ends. There is a halacha that is known as Miksas Hayom Kekulo. Miksas Hayom Kekulo means part of the day is like the entire day. That if you sat shiva for part of the day, that will count for the day. So that is why. So that
is that says he sat for 7 days.
I already closed it.
Avel
Shivas Yamim. That's how it goes. You really need me to find it.
What about the flood?
I know. I'm looking for it. I don't know. See, it says
Nun Yud 50:10. Yeah.
I thought it was when the body is in the grave and the soul is.
Okay, so hold on a second. We'll get to that in a moment. So we have a concept of Miksas Yom Kekulo. So when we measure the 7 days, day one is counted as long as part of it existed on day one. And day seven is counted into the seventh day. So the way to measure it, whenever the funeral actually happens, so the funeral happens, assuming the funeral didn't happen a second before sunset, that will count as day one. And then you'll count another 5 complete days, and then you'll get to the next day. So whatever day the funeral was, shiva ends a week later on the previous day in the morning. Okay, so shiva, if the funeral was on a Monday, so the shiva ends the next week on Sunday morning. Okay, that's the quick rule of thumb. So the next question is, okay, so when can you start the clock? When does the clock actually start? So the Gemara tells us what you were referring to. That refers to a concept called Stimas HaGolel. The Gemara calls it Stimas HaGolel. What does that mean, Stimas HaGolel? So Rashi on that Gemara, Meseches Ksuvas and Daftal HaMeveis, so Rashi makes the comment, the closing of the Arum. That's what it's referring to. When you close the Arum, so that's when it starts. Now, we might think for a second, wait, really? That's when it starts? So Tosfos says that can't be. First of all, that's not what the word Stimas HaGolel means. Stimas HaGolel means the role of the stone. At least that's what Tosos claims it means. It means the rolling on top of it of the stone. So when does Shiva begin? When you put the monument up. Wait a second, the monument doesn't go up for another while, right? So the Tosfos there makes a comment that whenever the work for that day is done, whenever whatever you're going to do that day in terms of burying the body, whenever that is done, so that's when Shiva begins. What does he mean by Stimas HaGolel? So they would put some kind of rock on top just to designate that this is where it was until you could put a nicer monument going on in the future. But that's what we assume to mean. That's the way we pass in Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch and Shin Ayin Hei Sif Aleph, so Shulchan Aruch says, Me'im Asai Chal HaVelus B'Shenikvar V'Nigmar Stimas HaGolel. When he's buried and when you conclude Stimas HaGolel, the Afar. With the dirt. So Miyad Maskala Avelus, so Avelus begins right away, and then he goes on and says some of the things that you do. That you do right away. So Shulchan Aruch assumes that it's by the Stimas HaGolel, when you cover up, when you have finished, when you have kind of built the mound for that day. Incidentally, that is the idea of filling in the entire grave, right? So when what happens at a funeral? So we have the funeral, we lower in the body, and then everybody pauses, right? Then we to fill in the grave. So, and then everyone is kind of waiting around for the graves to be filled in, and then they can say Kaddish. So what's going on there? So Kaddish can't be said until Avelus begins, right? Kaddish is said when Avelus starts. So therefore you need Avelus to start in order to say Kaddish. When does that happen? So he says after Stimas HaGolel. So most poskim assume that what does that mean? Stimas HaGolel means when you have concluded your work necessary to be done that day. Whatever you're planning on doing, you is done. And that's when Kaddish is going to begin. So therefore we try to wait until the grave is entirely filled. Sometimes it's just difficult, particularly if it's a very small funeral, and the family is not familiar with this. In my colleague in Phoenix, although he's not in Phoenix anymore either, Rabbi Holland, he used to point out that people have an impression that a funeral is a ceremony. He said, a funeral is not a ceremony, a funeral is a job. You have a job to do, your job is to bury the maize. But people often don't have that attitude, in which case it just becomes very difficult to fill in the entire grave. There aren't so many people willing to do it, and people are getting antsy, and it's cold out, etc. So perhaps the kula is that if you can try to do at least if you could bury so much that the person is halachically buried, so then we can kind of say, okay, we're done now, and allow the allow Kaddish to take place then. But that is not ideal. Ideally, we would fill in the entire grave before Kaddish would be said. Yeah.
What is halachically buried?
Just covered. So, body should be, I believe, at least 3 tefachim under the ground. So we're trying to do that at least. Okay, so that is halacha 1, that we try to do Stimas HaGolel. Now, there is a bit of a problem, because just no less than 4 sifim later, the Shulchan Aruch has another example here, where he says, Inasnu hames ba'aron, if the aron was put in the aron, v'nasnuhu b'veis acher, it was placed in like the closet, it was put someplace else, v'sheheter shahaisa ir b'matzor monin lo miyad shiva u'shloshin, that it once happened, it's quoting from a story that happened once, that the city was under siege. And the city was under siege. They couldn't get to the cemetery, which is outside the city. So somebody died. They put him in the casket, and they put him aside someplace, and assumed Shiva could start at that point. So why is Shiva, all of a sudden, Tosfos Rashi seems to, the Shulchan Aruch seems to be switching over to Rashi, which has various implications. But the Shach explains that we're not really passing like Rashi here. Rather, the halach is that we you know, you do as much as you can and assume the person is buried. Now, there's no indication when the siege is going to end. There's no indication when you're going to actually be able to bury this person. So therefore, you could bury the person right away. It's another similar, you could assume whatever you could do, you do, is done, and then you could have a velus right away after that. Similar to another din that the Shach has, and that is that if a person dies and is being held by the government is holding the body ransom or something like that. So can you begin starting shiva right away? So we generally assume, yes, that if the body is not going, there's no end in sight as to when the avelus is going to be able to commence. So we could begin avelus even though you don't necessarily have the body, because there's no, you have no way of knowing when you're actually going to get the body back, as opposed to sometimes when you do. This question is sometimes raised of things like if the government is holding the body to do an autopsy, right? So how long is that going to be? Not getting into the question whether they could or shouldn't be doing an autopsy. I just I remember a shayla that I had early on when I was interning at the RJC. So Rosenblatt gave me this issue and says, figure out what to do with this family. There was an issue that there was a member of the shul whose parents weren't religious, and their father died, and the mother, I think it was actually a stepmother, the stepmother said, I'm not doing a cemetery until my friend comes, and my friend is on a cruise, and they're on the cruise for the next 4 days, so this funeral is not going to be till, you know, a week from tomorrow. And the child, not only did this child religious and has to sit shiva, so they can't start shiva for another 7 days, so they're going to sit shiva for 2 weeks. There was also an issue that I think she had to go to the mikvah. In theory, she can't go to the mikvah until she finishes her avelus, and there was also a fertility issue. It was a significant challenge about how to resolve that issue. So one thing I want to do is try to rely on that shach, that the body's being held up. You're not, you know, the stepmother is not permitting the funeral to take place, so maybe you could rely here. Rav Shechter said you could rely on that. He gave a different eitzah, but we'll save that for another time. You want to say something? You want to say? No? Okay. Another question that comes up. Right. Another question that comes up is, and this comes up very regularly, and that is if a person is not going to be going to the funeral. Right? So this happens very commonly today, that a person is going to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, for example, and the person is... Well, there's two issues. Number one is there's a funeral that happens in America, and then the body goes to Eretz Yisrael, and the avelim stay here. That's one scenario. That is a big shaila. The other shaila that comes up is that if you have somebody, you know, a funeral happens in someone, there's two siblings, one lives in Israel, one lives in America. The person dies in Israel, and the sibling in America is not going to go to Israel. Right? They're just staying in America, and they're not going to go to the funeral. So when does avelus count start? In those cases, so with regards to which case, I don't know if we have time for both. Which case should we do? The more common case is what happens is the body goes to Israel. The people are here, and then the body goes to Israel. So what happens in that scenario? So there is a big machlokas about this matter. What should be done? What we generally assume is. Well, there's two questions. Number one, if the whole family, like for instance the Kohens last week, so there, all the avelim went to Israel. So there's no shaila, right? The funeral, if they're going along with the mace, so the mace is not going to be buried, you know, the avelus is going to begin when the mace is buried. So that's not really a shaila at all. Bigger shailas happen if everybody stays behind, or if almost everybody stays behind. So the Ramban tells us, that's actually Sif Beis here, that Mishadarchan Lishloach HaMeis Medina Acheres, that if they send the mace to another country, Lekavro, in order to bury them. Now, this is this was done commonly in the time, but apparently it was. This is actually a quote from the Rambam, and that's what happened to the Rambam, right? The Rambam died in Egypt and was buried. Everybody know where the Rambam was buried? Rambam was buried in Tiberia. Of all places. I mean, it's one thing to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, but Tiberia is all the way up north. I'm not sure how that happened. But the Rambam was buried in Tiberia. What?
Tiberias.
Where the Yam Kinneret is.
Oh.
That's where the Rambam is buried.
There's a bunch of
better place up north.
Right, you know who else is buried right near the Rambam?
Yeah.
Rabbi Akiva.
Nice.
Yeah, but the rabbi has this big thing, and like Akiva's right. You know. Whatever. The who has which kvarim have mazel and which ones don't is an interesting study to be done.
My brother was buried in Portland, Oregon. And I just came out of the hospital from an operation, and I couldn't go.
Right. Yeah. So these scenarios, these are not uncommon things, that especially today where everybody is spread out all over the world. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Mishadarkin l'shtolachem eslam din acher, so you're sending the body sample to hills to kavru, ve'inam yodim matay kavru, you don't know when the burial is going to take place. Meis sheyachzru p'nei melavos matchilim ninos shiva shloshim u'matchilim nisavel. So from the moment that you turn around, right, so you go to a funeral in America, and then the body goes off to Israel. So the Avelim turn around, and they go home. From the moment that they turn around and go home, that's when Avelis can begin. That's the way the Mechaber Paskins, the Avelis begins right away. Now, to continue that issue is...
Okay. Not when the mace is buried?
Yeah, they don't have to wait for the mace to be buried. They can go according, right? The person, they can start Avelis right away. So says Max, wait a second, does that mean what happens if the family splits up? Right? People are going to Israel, people are staying in America, does that mean that they're on a different count? So that actually depends on the question of whether that person is coming back or not. So if the person is...
You said that if, on, let's say, midpoint someday, you start to be mourning,
right?
It counts for that whole day.
Right.
So if the person is buried in Israel, we have different days.
Okay. Well, before you even get to that question, the first question is a person who's leaving, is staying in America, right? And then they're going, and the body is going off to Eretz Yisrael. So they're allowed to begin Shiva right away. What about if there's a family member that goes with the body? Well, that family member is not going to begin Shiva until the body is actually buried, right? So if that person is going to Israel, so it's possible that the Shiva will be on a different track, right? The person in America will be starting Shiva before the person in Israel is starting Shiva, right? The next child is, okay, what about if that person comes back, right? So this happened with my, when my grandfather was nifter a couple of years ago, so he had plots in Queens, and all of a sudden, right before he passed away, my grandmother said something about, you know, I think it'd be nice if he'd be buried in Israel. So, okay. So they had to figure out a way for him to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, which he was, Baruch Hashem. So my father went to Israel, and my grandmother and aunt, who lives in Israel, stayed in America, stayed in Borough Park. So they began their Avelis that night. They began their Avelis right away. My father went to Israel and then came back. So can my father go with their count? Can he go back to their count? And halach l'maisa, the answer was yes. That seems to be the minhag, that when a person comes back, he could go with the count with the people that stayed behind.
So he started later and finished at the same time?
Yes.
So he had a shorter...
Yes, he had a shorter avelis than my grandmother and aunt did, and they all got up. And they all got up at the same time. In terms of time difference, so I would throw in one more issue though, and this question is not resolved. I thought of this actually with my father's case. What is the reason that a person who turns around and stays in this, you know, the body goes off to another country and the person stays here? So what is the reason that their avelis doesn't begin? Why doesn't they begin? Sorry, does begin. Why does their avelis begin?
It's the last time they're
sober. What?
Last time you'll see them,
and you're done. Right. You're done, right? You're an onain until as long as you can take care of the body. And when the body is off to Israel, so you're finished. I'm not, you know, I have nothing left to do, so I'm going to go on and sit and do avelis. Right. The problem is, I raise this quite, Rabbi Mordechai Willig does these question and answers for Rabbanim every couple of weeks. So I've submitted this to him. I noticed today that the Badi HaShulchan raises this question. When today's modern day scenario, right, when the burial is taking place in Israel and there's somebody staying in America, what's that person in America doing? Are they sitting Shiva and people are coming and being menachim them? No. In reality, what are they doing? They're making phone calls to all the relatives in Eretz Yisrael. They're making sure that you know, that the kid knows about it and the cousin knows about it and the people are going to come. They're sending emails to make sure that the organizations that are going to announce it are going to announce it properly. And not only that, nowadays, they're Skyping in the funeral to America. So you're going to tell me that I'm finished. I'm already in Avelis when they're still very much involved with the funeral. Are you going to tell me that? So...
And the body's not buried yet.
And the body's not buried yet. So yes, in the old days where the body's going left to Eretz Yisrael, and I'm not going to do any, I'm not going to see it anymore, and I'm going to sit Shiva, and even making a phone call, I'm not going to do it because that's $40, etc. Right? So, fine, I understand. Right? You're going to begin a Avilus now, right away. But nowadays, where you're going to be completely involved with the funeral until the body's actually buried, even though you're in America, so why are you telling me you're in Avilus, not in Aninus?
I think what the matter is that you if that's something went wrong, you weren't there, you couldn't change anything that's going on.
You couldn't? You couldn't make a phone call?
I couldn't make a phone call, but that has to be someone else. Someone else now has that job, not you.
Really? So in a way, that was the, I mean, when I suggested this, Ray Willig responded by saying, "Yeah, you're right. You should try not to be that person. Try not to be the go-to person."
When you give a body over to the organization that's going to bury them in Israel,
right?
The organization's not in charge, not you necessarily. You might know about it.
I'm not sure. First of all, in reality, I'm not sure you're correct. The person who's the relative has a lot of say still going forward. But beyond that, so what? Who's in charge of the body? There's a lot of other things having to do with Covenant Mace. If you're making phone calls to get people to go to the funeral, it's a little hard to say that, oh, I'm done preparing for the funeral. Also, you're not. You're preparing for the
funeral. In the old days, if they put somebody on a boat, it could take 3, 4, 5 days
a
week to...
Right, that's another shaila on the books here.
24 hours.
Right, that's another shaila on the books. What's the shear of being far away? The Shulchan Aruch says the time is ve'inam yodim mata yikavir. You don't know when the burial is going to take place. So some suggest, okay, what if you do know when the burial is going to take place? Does that maybe change the scenario? So Rav Moshe actually says no. Rav Moshe says no. That's a shear. That's an amount of time. That's not a fact. Whether you do, whether you don't. That's whether it's if it's far enough away, then that's considered far enough away. I could be considering shiva. Now, even if you happen to know what time the funeral is scheduled for. Okay, I want to talk about the ending time as well, but I think we are out of time, so I'll have to save that for another time. Have a good day.